the haunted backroads of America, and live from the G&D Show Studio, this is your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show.
Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
Welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only, Mystifying Oracle Radio, your, wait for it, Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show, Demon Hunter.
Woohoo! Hey, Sean.
Happy 2016, buddy.
It's so dark in here. Can I put my clothes back on now?
Yes, you can. Special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Are you guys listening? I don't know. They don't know either, so let them know at Action Audio Apps. .com. The SYL Project. Share some love. Give some love today to those in need. The SYL Project.com. Check them out, guys. Everybody needs
some
love.
I need love.
Everybody needs some love. Welcome back
love.
To studio. A wise man once said that. A wise man. All you need in
wise
love.
Wise man?
Yeah. All you need in love. All you need is love, right? And that John Lennon, right?
And John Lennon was a wise man.
That's what they say. The followers of the Beatles. I never met him personally, but you know, one day when time travel comes back, you never know.
Comes back when time travel comes back.
Oh, it's happened. It has happened. So? Listen to the bell. It has happened. Time. Don't you see?
Are you sure, sir?
Well, haven't you seen these? These great topics on the internet. These fun topics. If it's on the net, it has to be true, right? And they'll have
on
like
the
a,
internet.
They'll have like
taken the time to what Eve.
Yes. If they've twatted about it. No, if you got, you know, it'd be the Battle of Gettysburg, and Lee will be, or Pickett will be riding his final charge at Gettysburg, and there'll be a kid in like an ALF t-shirt in the middle of the field. Come on, man.
So if it was an ALF t-shirt, then obviously. Time travel existed in the 1980s.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. And you know, ALF t-shirt, I think it's safe to say that ALF wasn't around the 1800s, yes?
Well, okay. He is an alien, so...
Hey, it might not
wasn't
be...
Wasn't he a very old alien? Wasn't he, like, really old?
You bring up a good point. I don't know. ALF was kind of old. He wasn't ancient. The cats. He ate cats. Kept him young. Do you remember that? He ate cats.
It was good for his skin.
Yeah, I think it was. So what's, hey, as the snow stops falling in beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana, here
the
outside
snow?
The studio. Yes, my God, man. We had like a foot and a half thick ice out front, so I had to scrape it off the sidewalks and all that good stuff. But
we had torrential rain.
Torrential rain, huh?
Yes.
Well,
we did not get the snow. We had rain. It still... feels like late October, early November here in Connecticut.
Yeah. See, we got that during Christmas, which is a real bummer because everything looks crappier. Whenever it doesn't, it really? I mean, think about it.
Right there. It's the shortest nights of the year, or the shortest days of the year, longest nights.
Yeah.
Everything's gray to begin with. And now the ground is wet and muddy. The joy just isn't there. And I told that to my wife, Chrissy P, and she just said, so you wouldn't want to be in, like, the Bahamas for Christmas? And I said, no, that's different.
Yeah, it's true.
This is New England. You're in the Midwest.
Yeah.
We need the snow for it to be Christmas. I did all my Christmas shopping.
Oh, that's good.
Sold all, you know, did everything I had to do for Christmas.
Well, those sex shops are a one-stop shop.
Well, true, and they're open late.
That's
so
not
it's
fair.
Easy.
Yeah.
And we, but I got it all done, delivered the gifts to everybody,
aww,
went to my Christmas parties,
uh-huh,
you know, fun.
What else happened?
But never felt like Christmas.
Well, possibly it's because you're Scrooge.
Well, maybe I time traveled.
Back to the time where the Krampus was sneaking around. You know, you can't get out to see the Krampus now. It's not the thing.
It's already gone.
Yeah.
I'm annoyed. It came out of Christmas time.
It was a good
Everybody
movie.
Was too busy to go see it.
Yeah, and it was a good movie, man.
You know what movie I finally saw?
What's that?
I finally saw Star Wars.
Oh! Brings up our next topic. What? Without... can you... How long do you have to go before you can say something about the movie?
Well, I've seen it now, so you can say whatever you want. All
right. Well, Shadow Nation, listen, you guys need to get in our Twitter account and let us know how long is long enough and how long is too long when you see a movie and, you know, since everybody's bringing it up, oh, my God, you spoiled The Walking Dead for me. Yes, that episode was 17 weeks ago. You know, it was in the second season. I mean, why, what point do you
say? For those of you who haven't gotten to see any of the Star Wars movies yet, Darth Vader is Luke's father.
You ruined it for me.
Spoiler.
Yeah. You ruined it for me. That's terrible, Nathan. How could you do that to somebody that has never seen the movie?
Yeah, I know. I'm just a bad man.
Well, since you brought that up, Billy Dee, Nathan, Billy Dee Williams, to make Star Wars Return. You never thought it was possible, but they say it's going to happen. This comes out of our friends at the Boston Herald. Doesn't come out of them, but it comes out of their, you know, publication. Billy D.
Billy
D. and Colt 45.
Billy D. Williams just came out of me.
You think he'll be drinking some Colt 45?
Billy D. Williams coming in? Never mind.
Colt 45, baby. On the Millennium Falcon. That'd be awesome. I would pay for... Okay, anyway. The 77-year-old actor who starred as Lando Calrissian... is the iconic film franchise, was overlooked for the eagerly awaited Star Wars The Force Awakens, but he is set to appear in the second of the three films, just like the original in Empire, if you remember right.
Oh, yeah.
Calrissian's Cloud City, and Chewie almost killed him. Anyway, an insider told the Sun newspaper, it will be a fun cameo. Billy's definitely up for it, so a cameo. So you're not going to get much of him, but I like the direction.
How do you think he's going to feel that he's not the only black man in the Star Wars universe anymore?
Oh, man. I feel cheated. I feel cheated. Yeah, I know.
You know, and folks, don't take this the wrong way, but one black man in the entire Star Wars universe, and now the hero is black. Where do you think that's going?
Exactly. Well, since, what did you think about it, though? What did you honestly think about, you know?
It was good. It was no Empire.
Yeah, you said that already. Let's move on. Let's move on to the new era. Let's give it up, Nathan. We're both in our 40s now, and it's a new era. And
yeah, but they don't make things like they used to.
They don't make them, but I'm proud. I got to say, I'm proud with The Force Awakens and the direction J.J. went to pass this on to a new generation without the CGI down and dirty and gritty. I liked it.
No CGI?
No CGI.
You mean those ships were really flying?
They were.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool.
Have to admit, there was this, you kind of lifted that wall from your brain, that disbelief, when they're running around in the cargo bay. No spoilers here, folks, but they're running around in the cargo bay, and like you look at a TIE fighter.
Yeah.
And it looks like the TIE fighter's really there. It doesn't look like it's drawn in.
Right.
So that was nice.
It did look good. Anyway, Nathan, while we're on the topic of entertainment, kind of a sad thing that came up here recently, and I thought we would talk about it today. But a good friend of the show, guys, we did, in fact, lose him. This comes from our friends over at Fangoria, their website. Of course, that's Fangoria.com.
.com.
You hear the music, guys. In honor of actor Angus Scrimm. He was a true gentleman of horror, they said. The tall man himself from the movie Phantasm has departed this mortal coil as actor Angus Scrimm, a genre legend for his unforgettable role in the Phantasm films. He's died at the age of 89. Entertainment Weekly reported the news of Scrimm's passing. Angus Scrimm passed away peacefully tonight, surrounded by his friends and loved ones. There you go. Rest in peace.
So sad.
Rest in peace, Angus. You will be missed. Great actor. Great actor. A lot of people that have co-starred with him in the movies have been on this program. They have.
Have.
They have been on this program, so.
When was that, Sean?
Oh, Larry Fessenden, for one.
Well, that's true. That's true.
You don't remember.
I don't remember. Those days are a haze for me, Sean. With all the wild parties and everything we used to do.
So many wild parties. So you liked Star Wars.
I did.
And it's raining in Connecticut.
It's raining in Connecticut. I like Star Wars. I saw The Forest.
You saw The Forest?
The Forest.
Oh, you did see The Forest. Well, since I went ahead and clicked this button, Nathan.
Let's go on to what you have to do next.
Tonight's guest!
Woohoo!
That's right, guys. Since 1979 through 1991, Scott McClellan has produced many strange and wonderful projects from vaudeville shows called Professor Crookshank's Traveling Medicine Show to the 1997 stage production on the supernatural, based on supernatural activity, called The Paranormal Show. And of course, the Carnival Diablo, which is one of my personal favorites, which was showcased and has been showcased on A&E, CBC, TLC, and many, many more. A lot of C's there. Huh?
Looks like your report card in high school.
Ah, I just put a negative sign by it. Anyway, guys, much of Scott's life has been surrounded in mystery and mysticism. And tonight, we're going to find out all about it. Dr. Rigamorto himself, Scott McClellan.
Rigamorto, remember, it's not Rigamortos.
I just said Rigamorto.
I know. You said it. I was just reminding people listening.
Shadow Nation, Dr. Rigamorto, Scott McClellan. He's going to stop by tonight. He's going to tell us all kinds of stuff, man. From, his family is steeped. Is it steeped? Steeped in mysticism.
Mysticism?
He's got a lot of big things going on. So get ready for that, guys. Very exciting. Very exciting show. Scott's awesome. He's going to be buying only the best right here at the home of the Mystifying Oracle Radio. Go ahead, Nathan. I'll let you do it.
That would be your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show.
You took too long. You bored the crowd. We've lost 20 people.
Oh, man.
We're sorry.
There goes 99% of our audience.
You had to think about it for a second here. There goes, let's see, carry the two,
divide it by one. You get the same thing, so times it by 10 and give a negative of pi.
Did you do good
like
in geometry?
Pie.
Did you do good in geometry and stuff? I doubt it.
I
seriously.
Did great in geometry.
Really?
I did horrible in algebra.
Yeah. I'm not.
Because, you know, you go, you take your math classes, then you take Algebra 1, then you take Geometry, then you take Trig, then you take Algebra 2. Algebra 1 I did great in, Geometry I did great in, Trig and Algebra 2 I was horrible in.
Trig. How'd you do in pronunciations? I just messed that up, see? I couldn't pronounce pronunciation.
I took elocution lessons, Sean, so I spoke fine.
The English dictionary was...
Grammar was another problem.
Reading was great to me. Math, I was, special class for me, baby. No, there's no shame in that. Lots of kids go to, you know...
No shame?
No shame. Well, maybe a little bit, but the special class has gotten better. Anyway, Nathan, they've gotten much better. They really have. Okay, guys, it's time for today's strange news. Straight from the G&D Show vaults, and it's hot off the presses, and it starts right
soon. Wait, now.
You wrote it. It's now.
Oh.
Today's strange. I forgot to say, it's always fresh, it's always exciting, it's strange, kooky, a little bit weird, and it starts right
now.
I forgot what I was going to say. I blacked out. Hillary Clinton vows to investigate UFOs in Area 51. Reaching, you think?
I need those outside groups to start voting for me.
Yeah, she goes, everything else isn't working, so I'm going to turn to the beer bellies. The beer bellies of America. No, I applaud her for even bringing it up. You know, as long as they would address it. And, we've had Nick Pope on, Stephen Bassett. All these guys have been going nuts. I called Stephen last week. And, of course, he went on Coast to Coast AM, so he didn't have time last week. But we'll get him back on, and he addressed the Hillary Clinton, because, you know, them fellas are out there.
You know what, though? What good is it to have politicians say they'll release all the information about UFOs when they're only releasing the information they want you to see, and everything else is so top secret that you'll never find the file folder that it's hidden in?
Yeah. Well, you know, I truly believe if Hillary Clinton was elected president, she would get to the bottom of the UFOs in Area 51, and then she would delete the emails. Ha! Ha!
Well, now she's on Snapchat, so they just delete themselves.
Well, Snapchatter. Anyway, Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton is hoping to make history, not just as the first woman pres, but as the political leader who is going to get, quote, get to the bottom, end quote, of the mystery behind UFOs. She already knows. She already knows. Anyway.
You know, Donald Trump would find that information and release it, too, only when he was done, he'd start building casinos on the spaceships.
Listen, Donald Trump probably has the aliens working for him.
He does have
aliens working for him. he does!
Oh.
Hey, it's not my phrase. It's not my term. It's been acceptable. It's politically. It's PC. Illegal aliens. Well, technically,
that's not even PC anymore.
Yes, it is.
No. Haven't you heard all the arguments, Sean? You're not supposed to say that anymore.
I don't watch the news. At a campaign stop in New Hampshire, that's out your way, Nathan, Tuesday, Damon Steer of the Conway Daily Sun reminded the former Secretary of State that he had previously asked her about the UFOs in 2007. According to Steer, back in 2007, Clinton has said that the number one topic of freedom of information request that her husband, former President Bill Clinton, received at his library was UFOs. As seen in the following video, and it's just a video of Bill Clinton. I hate when they do that. I'm trying to read a story here. Anyway, it's when he was on Jimmy Kimmel in 2014. He said, if we were visited by aliens someday, I wouldn't be surprised. I just hope it's not like the movie Independence Day. I hope there's not a conflict. Anyway, when Steer asked Clinton about her husband's comments concerning extraterrestrials, she said, I think we may have been visited already. Yeah, we don't know for sure, she says.
While staying in the White House, I kept hearing these strange noises coming from the Oval Office when my husband was in there with his intern.
And I think he was being abducted because he was never there, Bob. Or Steer, whatever his name is.
I'd walk in and my husband would be sitting at the desk, but you couldn't find the intern. It was like she was gone.
He would be hovering above the sheets making an up and down motion. That's crazy. Did you get it? Up and down.
Yes, everybody got that, Sean.
Okay. All right, anyway. UFO researcher once suspected that the military base had been used to house captured aliens in their spacecraft. It's now known as the Area 51. They're wearing that out, man. It's where much of the America's stealth technology had been developed. While Bill Clinton...
Aren't they going to give tours of that now? So.
They did a whole documentary on it, and they think this is going to go away. It's not going to go away, man. You cleaned out Area 51, you go, okay, everybody come in and roll film.
They moved everything below Dolce.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you got a stash of pot, which I don't, but if I did, and it was in the studio here, and I was going to say, hey, I'm openly invited all the world's law enforcement agencies to come through and do this, but you're going to do it on my terms when I say.
Didn't we just make a deal with that with somebody overseas, too? Let's not get political.
Let's not do that. Anyway. While Bill Clinton told Kimmel that he tried to find out unsuccessfully if any of the Area 51 rumors were true, his wife told Steer that her campaign chairman, John Podesta, you might remember that name, Nathan. We had Stephen on, Bassett.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, John Podesta was the one that was urging the government to get to the bottom of him. He was the biggest advocate for UFO freedom of speech for UFOs, Freedom of Information Act.
I've counted about 5 mistakes so far, Sean. When we're done, we'll have to remind the new listeners what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I wanted to jump in this, though, right away. Yeah, 5 drinks right off the bat, guys, as soon as Nathan explained. Anyway, he urged her to pursue this topic when he got out of office. He's made me personally pledge we are going to get the information out, Clinton said, one way or another. Maybe we could have, like, a task force to go to Area 51. There you go, guys. Hillary Clinton says, elect her, and she's going to bring the little green men out. She's going to find out, Nathan.
And then she'll give them the right to vote.
Yes. That'd be the first thing. That'd be the first thing. And then they won't have to pay taxes for 5 years, and they can own something.
We're bitter. Yeah, right, anyway. Right. So, folks, like Sean was saying just a moment ago.
I want a gas station.
This is the Ghostman and Demon Hunter in the news. Pick right out of the papers because we like the titles.
Yeah, we do.
We don't read them in advance, so we make a lot of mistakes. Every time we make a mistake, you take a drink. Mm-hmm. That's the G&D drinking game. Of course, we recommend that if you are driving in your car right now listening to the show, please don't play the G&D drinking game. And if you have anything important to do like go hunt little green men, please listen responsibly.
Oh, and you hear this bell, guys. That's the G&D drink bell, so... Sometimes I forget. I get so caught up in the...
You were so excited to read that story. You wanted to jump in and get the first story in.
Yeah, so you, Shadow Nation, you have to take it upon yourself to... We'll trust you. take the drink.
Now you're five drinks behind, folks. Everybody take five drinks.
Yeah. It could be beer or whiskey or wine. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. you're up to bat, buddy, on the news.
I'm up to bat. Hey, Sean, lightning strike leaves Bison with badass scar.
Oh, I hate that.
I know. Don't you hate getting struck by lightning? Because you know.
I didn't get struck by lightning. Ha, ha,
ha! De-har, har.
Yeah. Anyway. Oh, no. I was going to finish it there. There you go.
This bison survived the terrifying lightning strike.
Ooh.
This comes to us from the Huffington Post, Sean. And has a serious battle scar to prove it.
Okay.
The bull, who is named Sparky, after his close call, was struck at the Neil Smith National Wildlife Refuge, 25 miles east of, have a drink, folks, Das Meos, Iowa.
Das Meos.
I said it right. Hey.
That sounds like a New Mexico.
In 2013. Oh, well, this is an old story.
Yeah.
The electrical discard. Discharge. Have a drink. Scarred the.
Scotty, beat me up.
Yes. A large section of the bison's shoulder, hump, and leg. Rangers feared that he would die.
Yeah.
He was thin after the strike. And wasn't expected to live long.
Oh.
The U.S. Department of Interior wrote in a blog post on Thursday.
Yeah.
But he survived. Mm-hmm. And per the post and newly released photographs, is now 11 years old and still going strong at 1,600 pounds.
Did he have superpowers?
Well, he's got like a mark on his back that kind of looks like a lightning strike, so I think he might.
There you go.
He's lightning bison.
Yeah. Everybody knows you get struck by lightning, you get superpower.
He is smaller and thinner than the rest of the herd, which he joined in 2006.
Yeah.
And the National Bison Range in Montana. According to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services, his father... Oh, sorry, have a drink, folks. He's fired... fired... Jeez.
Two drinks.
He's fathered three calves, and officials hope that he will reproduce again because he's a tough bison.
Well, yeah, he is.
I'm ready.
Lightning strikes kill an average of 49 people in the U.S. every year, according to the National Weather Service.
That's a lot of peeps.
That's 49 people. That's you. That's why you have better chances of getting struck by lightning than winning the Powerball.
Right. Oh, it's nobody won, did they?
Nobody won, folks. So it's time to go crazy and all that stuff.
Hey, Nathan, we like UFOs, right? We got one in studio here, Bob the Alien.
Yes, Bob the Alien.
Yeah. ET's looking for a place to park, buddy, from HuffPost Weird News.
Okay.
Thanks, HuffPost Weird News. Yeah, this was cool. I seen this week. Anyway, Santiago, Chile.
Right? Chile.
Some highly unusual groups of aerial lights appeared over Santiago, Chile in December. And while the exact date of the incident isn't known, a video caught the objects moving around in a very interesting pattern. Okay? After looking at the two-part video, Nathan, it's a two-part video. Yeah. It's easy to wonder why only one person captured the event. And from only one vantage point. According to the Daily Mail, an unidentified woman videotaped the lights. Unidentified woman videotaped the lights from her window while she and others are heard excitedly talking about what they're seeing in the sky. The first 2 minutes. The first two. It all adds up. This is solid. The first 2 minutes show four long strips of hovering multiple lights seen above. Then one by one, the strips move slowly away from each other. As they do this, you can see smaller flashing lights on each of them. They look almost like aircraft on a landing trajectory to an airport. Check it out for yourself, guys. Just go to YouTube and look up Fantastico Avistamento.
Have a drink, folks.
Drink, guys. UFO M Santiago Chile Des 2015. Or just look up lights over Santiago, Chile.
Hey, Sean, here's one that will be near and dear to your heart.
Oh.
Boxer shorts worn by Tom Brady in Ted sequel Super Bowl game ball up for auction.
Burn them. The world doesn't need them.
This comes from UPI News, Sean, in New Jersey, January 8th. A pair of underwear and a t-shirt worn by NFL player Tom Brady in one of last year's biggest comedies are now being placed up for auction. The clothing items worn by New England Patriot quarterback in the film Ted 2, starring Mark Wahlberg, are for sale via auction.
That's not a plug.
Site in Golden Auctions.
Meh.
And have a starting bid of $2,500.
$2,500. And we wonder why.
Can't get $2,500 for your used boxers.
We wonder why these, how do you know? Well, you wonder why these things go to people's heads, you know, playing sports when you pay $2,500 starting on a pair of dirty boxer shorts.
You think people are calling up going, have they been washed?
Yeah, no. There's probably a lot of women out there that prefer they not be washed. There's some sickos.
Hey, Sean, you know how we were just saying that nobody has won the Powerball yet?
Yeah.
Nobody has won it. But in Massachusetts, a woman has won the $1 million scratch-off prize twice in the last 7 months.
Okay.
That's just not fair, Sean.
Nobody's investigated that, right?
Yeah, I know. Again, January 8th, UPI News from Massachusetts. A Massachusetts woman won $1 million prize from the state lotto for the second time in 2 months.
Yeah.
Jane Hoyt. Now, everybody, remember, go find Jane Hoyt. She has money to give up.
Yeah, you ever wonder after...
Jane, we need a loan. Jane Hoyt of Lynn, Mass., was the first grand prize winner in Massachusetts State Lottery. $1 million holiday bonus, the game adding to her June 10th prize of the World's Class Millions game. Hoyt purchased her most recent winning ticket at the Durbo Liquors in Lynn.
Bilbo?
Durbo. And her, I guess it's D-E-B-R-O, Debro. Sorry, Debro. Have a drink, folks.
Yeah.
Thanks for correcting me on that.
No problem.
Now everybody gets to take another drink. And her first winning ticket at the Shaw's in Peabody. She chose the cash option for both of the prizes, receiving $650,000 in payment before taxes, withholdings. She recently retired.
I bet she did.
Yeah,
I bet she did.
I'm not thinking this is fair, Sean.
We got to take their word for it, though. You know, you ever think about, you know, government conspiracy? We've had the black helicopters when we've had some controversial UFOs.
This is a way to pay some people off?
No, it's, you know, these people, you know, you never hear from them again after they're on the news and they get the big fat check handed to them, you know, the big cardboard check, and they go, what are you doing? Well, I'm moving away.
No, they go into hiding, Sean. If you had that much money, would you want everybody to know where you were?
How do you know? Exactly.
Because my name used to be
Mr. Know-it-all.
Guatemala, and I won the prize, and I got put into hiding.
From Santiago, Chile.
Yes. I look it, don't I?
All right, guys, we got to go to break. Scotty's going to be waiting. Tonight's guest, in case you didn't hear it before, since 1979, Scott McLellan has produced and directed many strange and wonderful projects, from vaudeville shows, one of them called Professor Crookshank's Traveling Medicine Show. God, I'm tongue-tied tonight. To the 1987 stage-based supernatural activity show, The Paranormal Show. And, of course, one of my favorites, the Carnival Diablo, which showcased on A&E, CBS, TLC, and much more. Scott McLellan, Dr. Rigamorto himself, stops by studio tonight, Nathan.
Okay, just one tip, Sean. The forest, not scary.
Oh, we didn't get to talk about it. Not scary at all, huh? Bummer.
Not scary at all.
Bummer.
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks, dude.
That's all I can say, folks. I don't want to spoil it. Not scary.
Well, you've spoiled it. Anyway, we got to go to break, Nathan. Every week, guys, we play an independent band we know, we love. We support the little man on this show. Tonight's band is the Columbines. The name of the song, The Devil's Crossing Me. Nathan?
Sean.
Shadow Nation. You guessed it. We'll be right back. Well, I woke up this morning to find, oh yes, the devil was crossing me. He ain't no regular man.
Oscar Hauser.
Hey everybody, it's Dean Haglund, Langley from the X-Files, and for some reason, you're listening to the Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Trust no one.
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one and the only Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Hey!
Hey, Sean!
Oh
hey,
my
Sean.
Goodness, what's going on?
Did Dean just say to trust no one?
He said trust no one.
Does that mean that nobody can trust us either?
No, they can trust us. I mean.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, then go ahead.
Watch, I'm going to be all messed up now. Since 1979, our guest tonight has produced many strange and wonderful projects, from vaudeville shows to the 1997 stage-based supernatural activity, The Paranormal Show. And, of course, one of my favorites, the Carnival Diablo, which was showcased on A&E, CBS, and TLC, just to name a few. Much of Scott's life has been surrounded in mystery and mysticism. And tonight, we pull back the veil, and we ask Dr. Rigamorto himself, Mr. Scott McClellan, what's going on. Scott, what's going on, my friend?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Oh. Scotty, you are...
How are you?
Oh, we're outstanding. Thank you so much for coming on. We know you're a busy man. We got some things popping. I know you do. And we caught you at the right time, brother.
Yes, you did.
Yes, you did. Now, you live in a castle. A lot of corpses around you, skeletons. How's that for your complexion to be inside vampire? Are you a vampire, zombie guy? What? What's going on?
Well, I'm not quite a vampire. I'd like to be one, but I think that just from all the concoctions I've taken over the years, I've just prolonged my life, as it were.
As it were, sir. You know, and I was going through the list of everything you've done. And I told Nathan, with the intro tonight, you will have to forgive me because I skipped over 100,000 things. But I wanted to let you get to those a little bit later. That way you can explain them and tell people, because all the hard work and the love you put into this, it comes through. You can see it. And I first learned about you, I seen a YouTube video around Halloween, and you were doing a spirit cabinet act spirit cabinet show on the spirit cabinet. And you brought the feel back of this ancient piece of spiritualism. And it just overwhelmed me. And, you know, you keep bringing it year after year, night after night when you do these shows. I just want to get into it. How did you start? What was your attraction to this? You know, you take it away. You're on the stage.
I'm glad you asked. Well, my grandfather owned the largest traveling circus sideshow in Canada from 1920 through 1968. And ultimately, when I was 11 years old, he got in touch with me and asked if I'd like to become a showman. And to make a long story short, I said yes. And I spent from the age of 11 to 25 apprenticing under him. And my grandfather's shows when he toured were not just sideshow, but he also did seance shows, like old-time spook shows on stage.
Yes.
And he created his own carnival. When I say created, I mean he actually built each and every ride that he had on show. And so he invented things that are now standards in the industry, such as my grandfather invented basically the teacup ride that you see at Disneyland. That the center wheel that makes that thing turn, that was my grandfather's idea. Looking back even further to 1918, before he even got started, he was looking at the Ferris wheel. And when they were moved from Germany, they were made by the Ferris Company. So the Ferris wheel is actually named after the company itself.
Right.
And
named after the man who invented it.
Yeah, and they were built upright as structures, either in steel or in wood. But when they were moved across the country, like from Germany to Canada and everything, ultimately what happened was sometimes the winds would catch them and they'd blow over and they'd splinter into nothing. So my grandfather thought that was absurd. So he built the first collapsible Ferris wheel that could be moved on a trailer, which was the advent of trailer-based rides. And then he was also looking at the merry-go-round, which at the time was a thing where horses and benches would just go in a circle on this large engine. And my grandfather was an equestrian rider, and he thought to himself, well, Jesus, you know, if I'm looking at this, I, as a kid, want to go and really feel like I was riding a horse. So he invented the mechanism that makes the horses go up and down, which is a step mechanism, which he called the bobbing horse merry-go-round.
Wow.
Which is now what we're used to seeing at every fair all over the world.
So he didn't get a chance.
Just a few of the,
oh, I'm sorry, Scott.
Those ahead. Are just a few of the things that he actually contributed to the world of carnival entertainment. But, you know, it was a wonderful world that he worked in, because my grandmother was a performer in his show, and she could swallow 7 swords at one time. She's in the Sword Swallower Hall of Fame.
Now, Nathan has some of that. He's kind of a carny guy, too. You guys have some in common there. His ancestors did that, right?
My grandfather was a sword swallower.
Really?
And, yes. In fact, on my wall in my bedroom hangs one of the swords that he used to swallow, a French bayonet, which is the most popular sword among sword swallowers. And, you know, it hangs there because as my childhood, I would just look at that and be amazed that my grandfather could swallow that. And years later, of course, I went and joined the carnival. So it was
good for you.
It was you know, that summer or two summers of my life that the carnival came to town, and I was in my late teens and I ran away with the carnival. It's
isn't that nice?
That's I think everybody should join a carnival at least once.
It's good for the soul, you know.
Yeah, it
really
is.
You know, it's not a dirty place. It's a place that, you know, actually people, they grow, they learn, and they actually become better people because of it. I think the carnival's a great place. And, like, my family ran carnivals for, like, 85, 90 years. And I mean my whole family. Like, my uncles all had their own carnivals. My grandfather had his own carnival. And I run attractions at large carnivals across North America now myself. And it's an exciting and archaic art form.
Yeah, and you know what surprised
to run a good carnival properly.
You know what surprised me? Carnival recently came to town, and you know, my wife loves to go around with me, and I'll play the different carnival games. Having worked the games, you know the tricks, and you win more. You don't win every time, but you win more because
dirty
you know
carnies.
What you're doing. Yes, small hands, smell of cabbage.
Joe Dirt.
But, you know, so we would go around. But I remember when I was working games, because you always wanted to work games. Guys who worked rides got straight pay. When you worked games, you worked on commission. So it was great. But I remember sleeping on the floor of my game, because you worked a game and that was your game.
That's right. And we called them a joint.
Yeah.
On the carnival. So you were sleeping in your joint.
Yep.
Yeah.
And now I find out they have whole trucks, tractor trailers that have built-in compartments, and everybody works gets a compartment.
That's
and
right.
They don't have to sleep in the games anymore. And all I could think was the locks must have gotten much better on the game. seems that they don't have to have somebody sleeping in there anymore.
That's true. That's true.
Well, you know, there's been a surge too, Scotty, with the freak show and the old fashioned, like, of course, oh my God, Venice Beach Freak Show. They had that show on, I believe it was AMC, not too long ago, a year or so ago.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And well, that wasn't the first resurgence. Like Carnival Diablo, my circus sideshow, started in 1992. Right. We opened on April Fool's Day, and pretty well at the same time as we started, another guy came around from Seattle named Jim Rose, and he started his sideshow. Mm-hmm. And so we were at the epoch, the beginning of the resurgence of circus sideshow. Jim and I toured all over the place and brought back that wonderful love and need to see the freakish, the bizarre, and the unusual. And Carnival Diablo took its own route because Jim was kind of rock and roll and everything, and he'll always be remembered for Lollapalooza and other big rock concert type affairs like that. Whereas Carnival Diablo is a circus sideshow that has been created that has a very strong theatrical feel to it. You actually fall into the world of a Victorian sideshow that's run by the devil.
Yes.
And the ring monster of the show is, of course, Nikolai Diablo, who I play. And I bring out my consortium of creatures and misfits to the stage where they perform their astounding feats. And I've been doing this now, this is our 24th year. And in 24 years, I've been the only trainer of sideshow feats in Canada, and I've trained 42 people in the past 24 years.
Wow.
Well, you know, yeah. A lot of times, Scott, in life, when we start out, like, you know, we're all entertainers here, and we start out doing jobs, working at supermarkets, stuff like that, and you're hating life most of the time because you know what you want to do. I would thank you more so than everybody because you grew up with it. You knew exactly what you wanted to do. Now, did you ever have different jobs where you were like, oh my God, just to make ends meet until you had your thing up and running?
No, when my grandfather started apprenticing me at 11, by the time I was 12, I was already doing television specials and touring different exhibitions across the country. Mm-hmm. And so I basically knew exactly what I was going to do for the rest of my life, which was be an entertainer and a showman. But I wasn't doing Carnival Diablo until I was 27. So before that, I was touching on another side of my grandfather's life, which was vaudeville. And so I performed for the first 15 years of my career an old-time vaudeville-style medicine show called Professor Cruikshank's Traveling Medicine Show.
Yeah.
And I've brought it back around 5 years ago, and I'm still now performing it like in my summertime period. So it's rather exciting to actually go back to a show that I produced when I was very young, now as a person that's in his middle age, and doing it at an age where I actually am more like the character himself. When I wrote the show when I was a younger man, my character was supposed to be in his 40s or 50s. Well, I was only in my teens at the time. Mm-hmm. Well, look at me now. It's like I'm actually in my 40s or 50s. I'm not going to really say exactly what my age is, but I mean, the beautiful thing is the character has grown. And now Carnival Diablo, the Professor Cruikshank, and all the other characters I do are based in a time period which is the perfect time for me, which is my middle age. Because I always wrote my characters for a person that was over 35. And I find this age to be the most fascinating because we are learned. We've actually been through some life now. And so for the shows that I produce, the character seems to be a lot more powerful because of his age. And in a world that lives around ageism, where you're like, you know, it's youth that's driven behind most things that you watch on TV or see in magazines, my shows are driven by an elderly style of entertainer, much like I'm not as old as Ian McKellen or Patrick Stewart, but much like the flavor of what they're doing, because you look at them and you go, shit, these guys are awesome. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. So,
and so the reason I say that is because I think that it's really neat, to be performing, in a time period where, well, you are at this age. I think it's a great time to be performing. I'm at my pinnacle right now, I think.
Well, you're pinnacled. No, 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 because that would mean it's all down from here. No, no, no.
Well, I can't say that. You're right. You know what? You're absolutely right. It's not downhill. It's still upwards. But the thing is, I'm loving the time that I'm working in right now. Like, when I was younger, I was always ulcerating to get a little older. Now I'm at that time period where I'm really happy with my age.
Oh, and I think that, like you were talking about ageism before, I was a kid who couldn't wait to be in my 20s. And when I was in my 20s, I couldn't wait to be in my 30s. Once I hit my 30s, I wasn't looking forward to the 40s because I didn't think I was going to live to see them. But, you know, now I'm in my 40s. I'm really happy where I am right now. I can't say 50.
Bingo.
I'm not saying that I'm looking forward to 50, but I'm hoping that I'm doing what I'm doing now and just on a bigger scale when I'm in my 50s. It's
So I'm
happy, you know?
Yeah.
Now, I got to say, Scott, you have, it's hard enough to keep one project going. You juggle, I don't know, 5 or 6, like it's not, well, I know it's
well,
it's
he's from
lot.
The carnival. They can all juggle.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about the paranormal show. When did it start?
Yes.
What's it involve? And, you know, is it really paranormal going on in there? You ghosts, stuff like that, Conjuring?
Well, you know that's a great question. I started producing the paranormal show in 1997 because my love of parapsychology. I'm a parapsychologist outside of everything I do.
That's right.
And my love for the supernatural. And what I did is I produced a show, and I am still producing a show that is about 95 minutes long. And it looks at every facet of the world of the supernatural, whether it be mind reading, retrocognition, telekinesis, the ability to read a person's mind. It all these different things kind of play into the show, and I end the show with a séance, where I bring out Edison's machine to talk to the dead. And I guarantee in every show that we do that activity will happen. And that's because I've become kind of like a conduit, focusing energy, towards whichever stage I'm playing in. The place does not have to be haunted, because I'm dealing on something that I believe is not a haunting type of atmosphere as much as it is a quantum atmosphere. I really do believe in quantum physics and pulling from other dimensional planes. And so when I perform the show, I'm actually dealing on quantum levels that are different than the level that we're living on right now, which is the third dimension.
Wow.
No. That was heavy.
That was a bombshell, baby.
So suddenly I just got this image of you performing in the middle of an M.C. Escher painting.
Yes.
And
Picasso going on
for,
there.
For everybody who doesn't understand, that was a quantum joke.
Yeah. Let's not go crazy. The Shadow Nation, the level there, IQ, is right in the middle with me. So let's,
No, Sean. They're smarter than us. That's why they come to listen and laugh at us.
That's true.
Anyway.
Listen to these monkeys.
But with all these shows that you do and the attraction that you're gaining from the spiritual world, being a parapsychologist, are you ever afraid of contacting something you shouldn't?
Well, it's funny. I lived for 8 years in a mansion on Lake Ontario. And this was purportedly one of the most haunted places in Canada. There was a book written on it by Richard Palmisano called Overshadows, where he was a parapsychologist that studied the mansion for 9 years before I had even moved in and the activity that took place in there. And we had basically we had spirit activity, we had orbs, we had sprites, we had full-bodied apparitions, we had poltergeist activity. We had demonic activity, and it was constant. Like you couldn't go in a 12-hour period without some kind of activity taking place within the house itself. And one of the most harrowing things that happened to me, and I'll try and make this short, was a possession of a girlfriend of mine back in 2006 during the time I lived there. And it was a terrible experience. They actually did a TV special about it on a show called Ghostly Encounters, okay, where they actually told the whole story through me and actors, because it was almost too hard to believe that it could have happened. And it did. And thankfully, everybody came out of it fairly unscathed, at least physically. Yeah.
Well, Scott, or should I say doctor? The whole aspect of contacting the other side and pushing the envelope is something Sean and I have worked on very hard over the year. In fact, years. In fact, a couple of years ago, we made contact with the Dybbuk Box, cursed object in America.
Scott knows
and it. Horrifying.
When we did it, Sean, his house a day later got, or his car a day later got struck by lightning. And during the interview, I started complaining to him online that, you know, my back was burning and I had to get off the show. And
really?
I went out of the studio and I lifted up my shirt and my wife was outside and she just got gasped because I had fist size bruises in my back. So
Lord.
We were like, of course, we told this story on air. And of course, somebody got in touch with us and turned it into a TV show.
Right.
That's awesome.
Now, Scott, I got to ask you about that. Let me explain the Dybbuk Box real quick. I'll run it down real quick. Here's what happened, okay? Nathan gets the hell beat out of him. He takes off his shirt after the thing. I'm burning up. He's texting me during the show. He takes off his shirt. It looks like he's got man's hand fist prints all over his back. Next day, book comes in the mail from Jason Haxton, that is the owner of the Dybbuk Box. He says, sorry for what happened to Nathan. I hope you guys have it back. And, you know, we had a bunch of interference on the radio during the interview. And I open the book up. I put it down. I put it in my PJs. I sit and grab a beer, sit in the easy chair. Boom. Loudest bang I ever heard. Something hit the house. Figured it was a transformer. It wasn't. The only house on the block. We had a gas leak. All of a sudden, the main in the street had was pumping the house full of deadly gas coming in through the only room in the house, the studio. And we had to evacuate the house that night. Next day, I found out my car blew up by a lightning bolt. And it only burnt the seat and the console where I would have been sitting. So you put two and two together after a while, and you have to go, I wonder if that was coincidence, you know?
And not a coincidence.
Oh, Lord, that's,
not a coincidence. Sean's wife will no longer allow him to.
Yes.
Of course, a week later, Sean gets on a plane and flies down and touches the Dybbuk Box.
Well, that was smart, Sean.
Yes, I know. I'm a glutton for punishment like you,
doctor. If I were close enough to you, I'd be slapping you right now, but whatever.
Well, your family's been around this stuff. Tell us about the Edison Box. How did you get it? What does it do? The things you use.
Well, you know, it's a strange contraption. For many years, people believed it was maybe just a myth. But Edison actually had one of his scientists build the box for him because he didn't want his name attached to it just in case it didn't work. The gentleman in question, he ended up testing the box because Edison passed away before the box could be finished. And, well, the box didn't work exactly like they had thought it would. And so it was shelved. And around 12 years ago, there was a large auction, and what happened was the family of this scientist, he had passed away, and they had this box in their attic, and they found out that there was actual letters from Thomas Edison to their grandfather talking about the box, and that the box, being that it was supposed to be something that could speak to the dead, they were a very religious family. They wanted no part of it, so they actually asked to get rid of it by doing an auction. Mm-hmm. And I was one of the people that was lucky enough to hear the auction. I bid highest, and I got the box. I have taken that box, and I have used it, believe it or not, on stage successfully at least 140 times in the past, goodness gracious, 18 years. And it's an exciting thing because it's hard to explain. Like when the activity starts, when you start to actually pull activity towards the box, sometimes people get touched, like I actually pushed or shoved physically while they're on stage. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they get hot and cold flashes. There are times where a poltergeist activity happens on the set, where pieces of the set actually fall apart, and these things aren't rigged; they're just happening. It can become not really dangerous, but it can become rather harrowing for the audience because we aren't in control of that while it's happening. And of course, I do a complete cleanse and a smudge of the theater by the time the evening is over. just to make sure that everything is gone. But the Edison machine is an unusual piece of equipment. I'll try and send you a picture sometime over the next week so you can see what it looks like.
Oh, please. I would love to see that. Now, I've seen the spirit cabinet practice. I'm not going to say a routine. Some people believe it, you know, actually does things. And we do know some history behind it. It was part of the spiritualist movement and stuff like that. It's so cool.
Made famous by the Davenport brothers.
Yes. And I love that history. And that's one of the things that's great about you, Doctor. You know your history when it comes to the paranormal, and you bring that through with the show. People don't know what the cabinet is, the spirit cabinet usually. Have you ever had anything weird happen besides, you know, did people freak out and run out of the box?
Well, I'm not magicians will take and bring a person into the cabinet with them, and do the silly thing. Like, you know, they end up finding a bucket on their head and their pants are rolled up and all that. I don't do any of that shtick because that's a magic show type thing.
Right.
The spirit cabinet, when I, have it on stage, is done with a medium that is not me, that is tied to a chair and placed within the cabinet. And the activity that takes place, honestly takes place while they're in that cabinet. And the audience sees it happen. And that's the difference between doing it as a magic act where you bring people in on it, and doing it really. Because, like, I have people from the audience come up and tie her to the chair so that she's tied strongly to the chair, not like with magic knots where she can get out of them or anything, but she's actually physically tied to the chair properly. And it's quite an exciting thing to see, because the activity within the cabinet can be rather violent. You know, things do fly, and apported objects, you know, yes, do appear within the cabinet. It's rather unusual. It's an exciting thing to watch because I never know what's going to happen next.
Right.
And although I'm, again, being a beacon, focusing the energy, because I don't even like to call it a spirit cabinet anymore, because I need my idea of what's going on is based on quantum theory. I call it a quantum cabinet because I'm actually focusing quantum energies from other dimensional planes towards the cabinet that are actually changing the reality of that area that I'm working in.
No, you know, in the time we live in now, where so many people are interested in the evidence behind what happens, being a parapsychologist, have you ever set up equipment so you could read what's going on with the Edison machine or the quantum box? If it's giving off EMF, if it's giving off
we've had EMF recorders, we've actually had simple reel-to-reel tape recorders running on record during our seances and all that, and we've picked up EVPs, we've picked up sounds beyond the veil. But again, I personally don't believe that I'm contacting a dead person, a person that is a ghost, because a ghost is, if you want to believe in ghosts, a ghost is something that's actually playing out kind of like a videotape. It just keeps on doing the same thing over and over and over again. Whereas a spirit is something that is tangibly completely different, because it comes into a place sentiently. It seems to know what it's doing, and it changes every time that you experience it. Whereas a ghost, you know, you always see the lady in white going across, you know, a hallway or something, but it's like she's in a time loop. She's just doing it over and over again.
No.
With quantum theory, though, I think that what we're dealing with is sentient energy that knows that we're looking at it as a certain, what we'd like to call, spirit. And so it's playing with us because it has no way to communicate that it is something that it is, that we believe it is. In other words, it can't say to us, I'm not your spirit that you're talking to. I'm another creature, another type of energy that you don't understand. So it can't do that. So instead, it pushes things, it moves things, it maybe pushes you a little bit, or, you know, even makes it, maybe even tries to talk through you, which is, of course, something that can happen sometimes during a seance. Which is possession.
Yeah. Now, Carnival Diablo, the paranormal show, things like that, are they still going on? And can people get in there? What time of year is it? Where can they purchase tickets?
Well, you know what? If you want to keep up with things like Carnival Diablo and my other productions, Carnival Diablo, go to carnivaldiablo.com. Of course, www at the front of that. The paranormal show is theparanormalshow.net. And if you want to also just online keep up with other things that I'm doing, you can go to facebook.com/humanimaginarium. Ooh. And that's a little thing that I just started up over this past week. And what it is it's an homage to the fact that humans are unique from every other animal on the planet because we have the ability to imagine things. And in imagining things, we can create things, which could be gods, could be ghosts, could be lake monsters. We see things differently than animals do. And so this wonderful little page on Facebook opens the mind's eye up to how our imagination works. And I try and involve people as much as possible, and I ask them to show me what inspires them in the world of imagination. So if you go to facebook.com/humanimaginarium, you can actually pick up on things that are going on in my world that way also.
And you guys got to follow the doctor here because the man is one of the most fascinating. You should be in a beer commercial. One of the most fascinating men in the world.
I don't always hunt ghosts, but when I do,
I drink.
Well, you know what? I'm glad that you call me the doctor. And you know what? A lot of people don't know what we're talking about. I'm working on a new television series that's going to be coming out hopefully in the next year. Mm. And it's an adult series called Dr. Rigor Mortis Emporium of Terror. And it's an homage to the Munsters, the Addams Family, the Hilarious House of Frightenstein, and even to things as up-to-date as What We Do in the Shadows. So what we are doing is a TV series that kind of is based on a high-end fantasy level of horror and comedy.
Love
and you
it.
Can find out more about that by going to drrigormortal.com.
Ooh.
Oh, it's awesome.
I actually, Sean and I have been privy to see a little bit of it, and I just got to say, fun. Yes. I had so much fun with it. I was telling Sean, I was like, we have to see more of this.
Yeah, well, it's got everything, guys. So look out for that in the coming years. Where do we go from here? What's going to happen next, Scott? Big things, I know, but where are we going to go? Like for tomorrow, next month, and what are you looking at?
Well, this year is probably one of the biggest life-changing years of my career. Carnival Diablo is 24 years old this year, but That has been a part of my life for a very, very long time. And it's also been a part of our family's life because of the fact we've been running sideshows for so many years. What I am preparing to do for this upcoming year, this year right now, is larger than any TV series I could ever think of, any stage show I could ever conceive of. And I can't give this all away right now, but I can say this. It'll be something that the world can actually enjoy and fall into. And in the next 2 months, everybody will know about this.
Uh-huh.
And when I say that, I mean everybody will know.
Now,
our advertising campaign will be very strong worldwide.
The day you start announcing it, will you send us the press release so we can announce it too? We want to be among the first.
That would be my pleasure.
Ooh, thank you.
There you go.
Absolutely. And when we do the grand opening, I would like you guys to actually be on hand to be there to do a podcast of what is going to take place, because it is huge. And I mean, anything I've done in the past, including the TV, is small compared to what we're about to embark on. This is huge,
Scott,
and I'm very excited.
That's an honor, Mike.
Now I'm excited.
Yes, I am too. Thank you for that honor.
I'd say I'm on pins and needles, but hell, I'd be lying because I'm always on pins and needles.
Well, see? Stop sleeping on Uncle Fester's bed.
He's on a bed right now, pins and needles. Anyway, Nathan, I know we went over, Scott. Nathan, do you have anything else for the doctor, the good doctor?
I just wanted to say I was so fascinated with everything you were saying that I was literally mentally checking all these questions I wanted to ask you. And forgot every single one of them because I got into talking about something else.
It's all good, man. And you know what? I've had so much fun, too. And whatever you could use, because I'm very happy that we've gotten time to talk together.
Oh indeed. One thing I did want to ask you, with all the stuff that you do and you travel, what cities, what places when you go are the ones that receive you the best?
Oh, goodness.
I used to love traveling down through Louisiana because people love the carnivals in Louisiana. It's also,
sure.
It's also nice because it's late in the year and it's cool when you're down there. You know, New England, you get up here during the carnival, it's middle of the summer and it's hot as hell. But it's, you know, where were you received the greatest?
Well,
what cities do you look forward to going back to?
It's funny. In traveling most of my life, I found that, I've done the Calgary Stampede, all the major exhibitions, the Toronto CNE, the Canadian National Exhibition. I've done all the major exhibitions across Canada. And I'm learning, just from traveling so much, that doing the smaller fairs, the tinier towns,
yeah,
that you get a better type of people going that actually take the time to enjoy themselves. Right. They're not running around. They don't have their cell phones in their hands. They're actually living kind of like the Mulberry Street thing of Leave It to Beaver. It's like they're bringing picnics with them. They're enjoying their family time. And when I'm out there doing like either the freak show or the old time medicine show or whatever I have with me on the carnival lot, I find that the smaller towns are embracing it even in the 21st century. And I know that we'll always be embraced by the cities because everybody likes the edge of what we're doing.
Yeah.
But my solace, my happiness is coming from these smaller towns. I don't have an ego about this. I don't care to say, I want to be in Toronto because it's the hub of what's going on in Canada. It's like, no, there are small towns that I enjoy going to because I know that I'm going to get much more of a kick out of it with the audiences than I would if I were at the CNE. Which is the Toronto large exhibition.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, Doctor, we support you 100%. We love what you do. You are an old world performer, sir. You you bring the in between the spook shows of old, and you mix it with the new and the paranormal. I mean, your shows literally have everything. I've never seen anything like it. We love you. Nathan, could you stay on the line 1 second, Scott, while we pay the bills?
Absolutely.
I guess we gotta pay the bills. You know, it makes me think, Sean, when you say
yeah,
when you say old world, it makes me think that, you know, 200 years ago, you and I would probably be sitting around a fire trying to keep people entertained doing this because we'd be the same people having to tell the stories. So
we would. Actually, we'd be in the fire for witchery. Sorcery.
The beautiful thing is what you guys are doing and what we're doing at this very moment is we're actually telling story. And keeping story alive in this day and age is so very important.
Agreed.
And so I applaud you and I take my hat off to you for allowing people to tell their story on your show. Because really, it is a lost art, the art of storytelling.
Yes, it is, and you're keeping it alive, my friend. And thank God we're lucky to be a part of it. So stay on the line 1 second, sir.
Absolutely,
Doctor
and Sean. Here we go,
DrRigamorto.com, guys. www. Make sure to check him out. Huh, Nathan? Great
yes,
show.
Yes, sir.
Special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors: Stitcher Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Or hey, are you guys listening? Because they want to know. So check them out at Action Audio Apps. com. Midnight Syndicate, Creative Commons, and Free Music Archives. Thanks for the tunes from the haunted back roads of America. This has been another exclusive G&D show interview. Don't go changing, America. You know we won't, Demon Hunter.
Because we love you.
Night, guys.